Mr. Hayden, whenever you're ready.
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
5 minutes.
And please court, my name is Charles Hayden, and I represent Christopher Dwayne Sledge Jr., who was convicted in bench trial in the Newport News Circuit Court of one count of malicious wounding. He received a sentence of 12 years with 9 years suspended. An issue that we have raised on appeal was whether the trial court erred in denying the motion to strike the charge, where it was unclear whether the blow that was suffered by Ms. Hannah Kareka had occurred intentionally or was done with intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill. The testimony of Sonia Miki Gonzalez was that Kareka had come up behind Sledge as Sledge was engaged in a fight with Julia Rossander, and that and as he drew back to in the course of this ongoing fight, draws back with his fist or his arm to proceed to try to inflict a blow forward on Rossander, he apparently strikes Hannah Kareka in the face with this bottle that he has. Well, if the testimony happened the way Sonia Nika Gonzalez testified, the prosecution witness who had no motive to lie, who observed there, well, clearly that was an accidental blow to the person behind him. He never saw her coming, and if it was not an intentional blow, if it's an accidental blow, clearly the intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill Hannah Kareka was absent. Certainly, it would not have indicated an intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill.
Don't we get into this? You're an experienced counsel, and I'm sure that you understand these concepts very well, and obviously argued maybe these types of cases in the past. But suppose we have a situation. I'm going to give you a really unusual situation that never happened. Suppose Judge Chapin is upset with me, and Judge Chapin is my friend, and so I will let you know that that's not likely to happen. Suppose she is upset with me, and she's so upset with me that she decides that she is going to put me in my place and hit me upside the head. And Judge Decker, being the peacemaker, steps in front of Judge Chapin so I don't get hit in the face and become hardly injured by the strength of Judge Chapin hitting me. And Judge Decker loses 2 or 3 teeth. Wouldn't we, under our law, say that Judge Chapin is responsible for the act that caused Judge Decker to lose her teeth? Because she was originally mad at me and was trying to inflict an injury on me, missed, and hit Judge Decker.
If he, the doctrine of transferred intent would apply if he was wrongfully attempting to strike Julia Rossander. However, it's not clear from the testimony of the prosecution witnesses that he was, in fact, wrongly.
Don't we look at the historical facts in that circumstance, because it was clear that your client had some issue with leaving. I think everybody can agree on that. And that the females at this event were trying to encourage him to leave. I'm giving you the benefit of peaceful language. They were trying to encourage him to leave. He did not want to leave. And so there was a lot of intervention that occurred between a lot of other people there trying to get him to do what everybody wanted him to do, and he wouldn't do it. And then that's when the blow was struck.
Well, I think the testimony that was agreed to by all the prosecution witnesses that was that he was in fact leaving. He was leaving with his companion and it just wasn't fast enough to suit Julia Rossander. She was she follows him outside the apartment. Now keep in mind, he is already in the process of leaving, going outside the apartment when she proceeds to assault him. And that's not a warranted thing. He doesn't have to stand there and blindly accept this physical assault upon his person. That, for example, to give you the testimony of of...
Well, counsel, there's a bunch... let me just cut to the chase here. There's a bunch of different testimony. And the Commonwealth's witnesses were all over the place. But there is a version of the facts that supports the conviction, correct? That take away any of the conflicts. There's a version of the facts that supports the conviction.
If we set aside the mutually contradictory accounts, yes, there is a version that could lead to an adoption of transfer of intent.
All right, so let me ask you the follow-up on that. So unless that evidence which supports the conviction is inherently incredible, you're stuck with it, we're stuck with it, correct?
Well, I understand.
I mean, I'm just trying to get it to the bottom line.
But if there was something here that made... Julia Rossander's statement that she was it's hard to, there was nothing that made Sonia Koretke, Sonia Nikki Gonzalez's testimony untrue or improbable. The bottom line is there is doubt here about what happened. Reasonable doubt, and it's impossible for the trial judge to say with any kind of certainty in this situation where the testimony is diametrically opposite about whether Hahn was behind the defendant at the time she got struck, or she was in front of the defendant behind Julia Rossander.
Don't we have a lot of case law? I understand what you're saying, but don't we have a lot of case law that suggests that a fact finder could take a look at all the facts and circumstances and disregard inconsistent evidence as long as there is a basis in the record to justify the conclusion of the fact finder? In other words, you could have 17 people get up and tell 17 different stories, but isn't it in the province of a fact finder to pick out which one of those versions of the events he or she wants to believe, or it wants to believe?
Yes, but certainly the fact finder has to view the evidence in the light of the presumption of innocence, and in light of the Julia Rossander's admission is that she strikes.
When I was a defense lawyer, that was the argument that I always made, but it comes down, and that has been interpreted to simply mean that the Commonwealth needs to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's all that statement in our jurisprudence really means.
Right. But you have a testimony here of Julia Rossander admission that she punched the defendant four times in the face. And at that point, there's clearly a physical assault occurring upon the defendant who's already apparently outside the door of the apartment. And why it seems to me that this is not an imaginary a defense offered by a defense counsel, there is this reasonable hypothesis of innocence that the evidence simply failed to exclude that he was warding off a physical assault, an unwarranted, unjustified physical assault upon his person as he's trying to leave the apartment, and that if he tries to throw a blow at Julia Rossander to ward off her physical assault upon him, having punched him four times in the face, that he then accidentally strikes someone else, the transfer of intent doctrine only applies to allow conviction if it was some wrongful, unwarranted act of self-defense. Well, he was being physically assaulted, punched four times in the face by the admission of Julia Rossander as he's outside the apartment, leaving the apartment. And I don't think the doctrine of transferred intent applies to try to act or ward off this assault upon this person by Ms. Rossander. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden. You have 5 minutes and 28 seconds for your rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Leah Darren for the Commonwealth this morning. Other counsel has admitted to the Court that a version of the facts support under the doctrine of transferred intent supports the conviction in this case. I note for the record that at page 54 of the appendix, Julia testifies that she did punch the defendant 4 times in the face, but she did so after the defendant had hit Hannah in the face with a liquor bottle. So as counsel has conceded that a version of the facts supports the conviction, that determination is not inherently incredible, and we ask that the court affirm the conviction. I do think that there is a lot of testimony in this case, some conflicting, but the trial judge, I think, did a fine job of summing up, and, which certainly was his job, to sum up the testimony, and the trial judge found that the defendant admitted that when he was swinging, he did so in according to who was coming towards him. And the trial judge found that the evidence was basically consistent, and specifically focusing on the testimony of the 3 girls, the court found that Julia and Hannah's testimony indicated that either the defendant was swinging directly at Hannah or Julia ducked and there was a straight punch and Hannah was struck in the face with a liquor bottle in the defendant's hand. The court found at page 102 and 103 that this was not an accident. And then the court looks at Gonzalez's testimony. And I point the court to Gonzalez's testimony at page 68 of the record. Now, there is conflict, some conflict about where the parties were in relation to each other, but at page 68 of the record, Gonzalez says that whether the defendant was in a backswing or a forward swing, the defendant intended to hit Hannah in the face. So when you look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, the court certainly was entitled to infer from this testimony that the defendant purposefully struck out, hit Hannah in the face with a liquor bottle, but that blow was inflicted with such force and violence as to cause disfigurement. The photographs of Hannah, both before and after the offense, certainly support that finding, that this blow was inflicted with malice and with intent to maim, disfigure, or kill. We ask that the conviction be affirmed. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hayden?
If the judge says it doesn't matter whether Hannah Kreck was in front of or behind the defendant, either way she was struck intentionally, well, that ruling is clear, would clearly be not supported by the evidence, plainly not a reasonable interpretation to say that when he draws back, he intentionally strikes her in the face behind him when he doesn't see her coming up behind him. That's an unreasonable interpretation right there. If he claims that it doesn't matter that she may have been behind him as was testified to by the prosecution witness, it was still an intentional blow. That's a plainly wrong ruling. It cannot have been an intentional blow, or at least there was zero evidence in the record to support the conclusion that it was an intentional blow when he draws back and strikes her, the person coming up behind him in the face. That's an accidental blow, very clearly. And that's a reasonable hypothesis.
But does it matter that he was pulling back intending to punch somebody forward?
You don't know.
That he hit somebody when he...
You don't know that he was intending, for example, to really clobber somebody in the head or the face. For example, if simply uses the bottle to ward off the blow of the arm, for example, but not to break the bottle, and of course the bottle never was broken. It wasn't.
Right. The evidence shows that he was intending to hit somebody in front of him.
If she's trying to hit him and he uses the bottle as an object to block the blow, like he might put up a stick or something, we don't know that he was intending to smash Julia Rossander in the face or in the head. He may have been just using it purely as a defensive object or just enough force to ward off the blow of the person trying to hit him from the front. And so we can't assume that he was intending to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill Julia Rossander in front of him, just simply ward off the attack. And so this is a reasonable hypothesis. It's an unreasonable interpretation of the trial judge to suggest otherwise. And they clearly, the testimony is, she said, even Julia Rossander admits that she says that Sledge looked at Perel and asked him if he's ready to go, and I said, no, you need to leave now. He asked if Perel was ready to go, and he started to back out of my front door. He had his hands balled up in his fist the whole time as he was backing out to go out of the apartment. He backed up. He opened the glass door with one hand and then the other. So she's admitting, Julia Rossander, defendant's on his way out the apartment, but she can't be satisfied with that. She's got to physically attack him. And that's corroborated by Hannah Koretka's testimony. She says they were backing up into the stairwell area, going outside the apartment. There was no need for Julia Rossander to go outside the apartment. He was leaving. She says, Koretka testified, it moved outside with them going outside the front door, which is where I got hit, outside of the front door. I ran up behind Julia and grabbed her by the arm. Why is she trying to grab Julia's arms? Because Julia is trying to strike the defendant at that very moment in time. She says, I was right behind her, and I have her arms from the back. And the reason why she tried to grab her arms, but for the fact that Julia Rossander's engaged at that moment in an ongoing physical assault upon, unwarranted physical assault outside the apartment upon the defendant. I think this is clearly a reasonable hypothesis that's not excluded by the Commonwealth's evidence, and I'd ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
We'll come down and brief counsel and then